Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
No deal in Washington on a COVID-19 aid package threatens state spending on schools and other important programs, Governor Tony Evers warns. COVID positives, hospitalizations, and deaths soar, and the State Fair Park Care Facility gets its first patient. A judge restores the governor's emergency 25% occupancy limit, but the ruling is quickly appealed. A record 1.1 million votes have already been cast for president by Wisconsin voters. Rewind, your week in review for October 23. I'm Steve Walters.
Hi, Ross.
In Washington right now, they're talking about the next COVID-19 package. And the latest report is that they're centering on a $1.9 trillion. But the point is, there's no deal. Speaker Pelosi set a Tuesday deadline. They blew past that. And I want to start this with a warning by Governor Evers that says what happens is if there's no additional COVID package, because he paints it rather graphically in a press conference this week. He said that the state would have to pay all pandemic-related costs beginning in January. He warned of dramatic cuts. And it's important to note that the first set of COVID packages from Washington gave the governor, without a check from the legislature, to spend, which he spent almost $2 billion. He spent that on higher ed, healthcare systems, help for businesses, retail, and energy assistance. So I wanted to start with a warning from Governor Evers how this could threaten the current fiscal year spending if there is no additional COVID-19 package. Before we hear from the governor, JR, your thoughts on the governor's warning?
Well, Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm, in our cover letter about our budget request back in September, warned about the cost of, we taxpayers in Wisconsin have to pick up the cost of testing through our state tax dollars, not our federal ones, about the issue of that. It's a fiscal cliff, essentially, for the state. If there isn't additional federal help to cover these costs related to COVID-19, that then squeezes out priorities, such as schools, such as prisons. What do you do with those costs if you have to pick up these additional costs with COVID-19?
Right. And the governor, in the clip that we're about to hear, even mentions it threatens aid to local government. So it's time to hear from about a minute of what the governor said, saying what could happen if there's no additional COVID aid package. But I want to stress they're working on a COVID aid package right now as we speak in Washington. Governor Evers, please.
We'd have to make some very, very, very difficult decisions in our next budget. Any, you know, money for schools is at risk. Funding for our health care outside of COVID-19 is at risk. There's a lot of things at risk that as part of our state's budgets and our state's efforts. COVID-19, we will have to pay for it, but it will be a significant issue for our budget. This is a nationwide thing, and there's no reason why the federal government cannot step in. People in Wisconsin will see a dramatic decrease in the services that the state provides and resources that directly go to individuals and schools and municipalities. We have to take care of COVID-19 first, and if the federal government isn't going to do their job, we will have to make the hard choices in Wisconsin.
Let's take a look, JR, at the tragic, the sad, growing, soaring, surging stats on COVID-19 in Wisconsin that were released by DHS. First of all, 186,100 positives, single day of the highest positives, 4,591. 7-day average positives, 3,396, and the deaths were up to 1,703. That's a pretty cataclysmic climb. Let's also look at the at one point, the number of counties that the case activity of COVID was considered very high a month ago, far fewer. Right now, when you look at the chart from DHS, only four Wisconsin counties in the northwest part of the state, are not very high. Now, I want to point out something as we look at that. There's a Stop the Spread coalition, which I just find fascinating because these are major trade groups and institutions like the UW system. 23 of them have formed a coalition urging Wisconsin residents to get very, very serious about stopping the spread. I just want to talk about a few of those groups: the hospitals, the restaurant association, the grocers, Wisc Counties, manufacturers and commerce, as I said, the UW system, Milwaukee Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce, realtors, bankers, builders, dental association, medical society, League of Wisconsin Municipalities. JR, your thoughts on this coalition? Because sometimes these are groups that have major policy differences in the Capitol, right?
Well, what's been striking is that the numbers keep climbing despite the warnings that we keep hearing from the governor. I mean, let's remember, the mask mandate's been in place now for a while. You went to the limits of indoor public gatherings. The issues are that, and we've heard people talk about this, there's a fatigue theory about Wisconsinites that between the stay-at-home order this spring, other things, people are not adhering to social distancing. They're not wearing masks. But I talk to lawmakers around the state. They'll tell me that it's night and day different between going into one spot in one community versus another. And so if people aren't taking it seriously and following the guidelines, we have an issue. So I don't know, as the governor keeps, you know, calling for things, as he keeps his mask mandate in place, as the fight over the limits on public gatherings continues in court, if people aren't following these things, that's not going to change the trajectory. So that's why he's calling for people to do something different.
Including watch the Badgers tonight, Home Alone. Anyway, let's look at one more other stat on COVID-19 in Wisconsin. That's hospital capacity. Latest numbers, hospital beds, 85% almost in use. ICU beds, 87% almost in use. Ventilators, 19%. And JR, you and I saw a press release from Dane County Executive Joe Parisi. For the first time, there are more than, there are 100 hospitalized in Dane County with COVID. And let's note the alternate care facility at State Fair Park just accepted its first patient, and who knows whether DHS later today will say there have been other patients at the State Fair Park. To summarize this, let's listen to DHS Secretary Andrea Palm and Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ryan Westergaard just summarizing the dangerous place Wisconsin is in right now. Please.
There's not a state whose hospitals were filling up the way ours are filling up that did not take mitigation strategies similar to and exceeding the ones that we have taken here in the state of Wisconsin. There's no doubt that the way you stop the spread of this virus is by reducing contact between people. The way you do that is through wearing a mask, through physical distancing, through not gathering with people outside of your home. States across this country and countries around the world have used them to bring their outbreaks under control, and it is what we need to do here in the state of Wisconsin.
What we know about the virus in terms of how quickly it spreads through a population if we do nothing is that it's very rapid and a large proportion of the people will become exposed in a relatively short period of time. So left to its own devices, we could have 10 times more cases and more deaths than we have right now. In fact, that's what would be expected if we didn't do infection prevention like we're doing. Knowing what we know about this virus, it could have been dramatically worse, 10, 20 times worse than it is. The only reason it's not is because we have done the things that the evidence shows reduces transmission. So yes, I'd say strongly the evidence suggests that what we've been doing has made a very large difference.
So those are the stats, JR, but we spent about an hour and 40 minutes on Monday listening to a Barron County judge, James Babler, hearing a challenge to the, 25% occupancy limit. Sometimes I get that confused with the mask order, which we'll talk about in a little bit. 25% occupancy limit was challenged by the Tavern League of Wisconsin, the mix-up bar in Amory, saying that the governor illegally extended this order, issued this order, and it would have a crippling effect on their businesses, as we'll hear in a little bit. But the judge refused to continue the temporary restraining order, which had been issued the previous Friday by a Sawyer County judge, saying that had blocked the occupancy limit. The Sawyer County judge had. The Judge Babler said that the Tavern League and Pro-Life Wisconsin, which was also a part of this, had not shown irreparable harm. But the Mix-Up Bar and Amy and Pro-Life have appealed the ruling. We're going to hear from the judge in a little bit, JR. Your thoughts on Monday's court action?
Well, if you recall last week we talked about this, we kind of thought the quick temporary restraining order issued by the one judge decided how this case would play out. What we didn't see was that right after that was filed, the Department of Justice filed a substitution request, which basically those are automatically granted to change the judge. Well, I got to change to a different judge, and then Tavern filed its own substitution request, changed to a different judge, lands with Babler, and he says in the hearing, well, we don't like it in the courts generally when you issue a temporary restraining order without at least hearing from the other side. And he opined if the original judge had heard this other testimony, that he wouldn't have issued that TRO right away. Right. Now, we'll never know the answer to that question, but that was his opinion. Interestingly, in the filing with the Third District Court of Appeals by Pro-Life Wisconsin and the mix-up, the Barn Amory, the lawyer for them argued that the judge misunderstood a number of things about the case, including how long the order had been in effect, that they needed an emergency order from the Third District based in Wausau to put this enforcement, this action on hold, the order on hold, while they appeal the merits. I still see in looking at both this and the mask mandate stuff, if it goes back to the Supreme Court, Brian Hagedorn to me is still the key. How will he rule on this with a second whack at it at a different court? But what I'm seeing is every time this stuff is in the news, every time you see a fight against a mask or a limit to fight COVID, it's in some ways good for Governor Evers because people want to see something done, right? They want to see feel more comfortable. They're seeing more, instead talk about a fight to prevent these things from being enforced. So when I talk to people about this, I say, hey, look, this is politically it's good for Evers. And Republicans continue to say, look, this is a difficult position for us. We believe on the law, on the Constitution. We have to have an equal seat at the table in this discussion. But politically, they know it's a loser for them.
Well, but in this hearing, Judge Babler went out of his way to say, I wish the Supreme Court in May, when it struck down the Safer at Home order, had offered more clarity to circuit court, lower court judges like me, to make a decision like this. But now it's time to hear from the Tavern League attorney, Mr. Johanning Meyer, and the judge who issued his final ruling saying, I'm not convinced. Please.
Some businesses complying with the order will fail, even in 20 days. Small businesses in Wisconsin, like the members of my client trade associations, like the Flambeau Forest Inn, have been hanging by a thread for months during this pandemic. If Palm can issue this order for 28 days, she can issue a new order on day 29.
There is nothing in the affidavits to show that any of the plaintiffs have complied with the order, that complying with the order has somehow harmed them. I don't see that anything is different if I don't issue the injunction. No one's saying they're complying with the order of the secretary. Nor is there anything in the affidavit showing that they've been threatened with a civil penalty by any authority. And finally, I find that there's no showing of irreparable harm.
Let's take note of how Governor Evers responded to this ruling by Judge Babler. This critically important ruling will help us prevent the spread of this virus by restoring limits on public gatherings. This crisis is urgent. Wisconsinites, stay home, limit travel, and going to stay home, limit travel, and going to gatherings. And please wear a face mask covering whenever you have to go out. Okay, that takes care, JR, of the circuit court action on the 25% occupancy limit, which at this moment is in place, yet this has been appealed to the Court of Appeals in northern Wisconsin. Now, let's shift gears and talk, as the subject is COVID in the courts, let's talk about the Supreme Court. A week ago, after we taped the show, there was a request from Waukesha County resident Jerry Fabick, who wanted an original action, who filed an original action petition before the Supreme Court, asking the justices to void Evers' emergency public health orders, arguing that they had been illegally extended without the advice and consent of the Wisconsin legislature. and the court ordered a response to Governor Evers. Before we get into the developments yesterday, JR, I just want to read the pleadings. There's a legal term, but as JR often says, we're not lawyers. Here we go. From Mr. Fabrick's lawyers. Can the executive branch keep Wisconsin in a perpetual state of emergency without authorization from the legislature by ignoring the flaws, the law's 60-day limit, the governor has effectively eliminated the legislature's involvement in the emergency declaration process. So we have a mass case that we'll talk about in a second. We have a 25% occupancy limit now in place being appealed, and now we have a request for an original action filed by a Waukesha County resident. But JR, what happened yesterday by Will? Will, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty.
What they're saying is, look, hey, court, if you're going to take this guy's lawsuit about the mask, why don't you go ahead and grab ours, too, and combine them for efficiency's sake? Now, in both cases, they want ultimately to overturn the mask mandate and say a governor cannot perpetually issue new 60-day orders based off the same pandemic. Remember, under state law, a governor can declare a public health emergency. To extend that public health emergency, she needs the permission of the legislature, a resolution. However, what Evers has done is declare multiple public emergencies now, three of them, off the same pandemic. The question is that allowed? One judge in these cases says that it is. We will see what the Supreme Court says eventually if it takes these cases. But everything's working toward them. And again, what I get back to is this is also an opportunity for Evers to maybe get a better ruling or more favorable ruling for him from the Supreme Court than they got in May when the stay-at-home order was overturned. Recall, 4-3 decision, conservative Brian Hagedorn joined liberals in that case. Now conservative Justice Daniel Kelly has been replaced by liberal Jill Karofsky. We don't predict what judges are going to do, but you would guess with that makeup, you may get a better result if you're Evers than what you got in May.
Okay. The two rulings by the circuit court judges upheld the mask order, upheld the 25% occupancy. 25% occupancy, the appeal is in the Court of Appeals, but now the appeal of upholding the mask order has now, there's a request, go directly before the Supreme Court for an original action. So it's COVID in the courts.
Governor hinted this week, we asked him during one of the calls, are you looking at extending the limits on public indoor gatherings? He said, yeah. You know, that's a possibility. Don't forget, it's a 28-day order, and for like six of the days or five of the days, it was not enforced because of a TRO. So we're not sure how many counties are actually enforcing it right now. So there are some holes in that order that may be limiting its effectiveness.
Right. Okay, new topic. At the Wisconsin Elections Commission meeting, the commission recommends that the state's 1,850 local clerks, and Wisconsin has the most diversified way of running elections in the nation, 1,850 clerks. I'm not going to ask you how you'd put it because I want to keep it nice. Asking these local clerks not to post preliminary vote totals, to post totals and indicate to say
that it may not include absentee ballots. So let's just look at the record numbers right now. I checked with the Elections Commission, their updated total, 1.63 million absentee ballots requested. Of that, 1.22 million have either absentee ballots requested or in-person voting, because lines formed in Madison, UW campus, Milwaukee. 75,000 people voted in person on Tuesday, right, JR?
Something like that, yeah.
And then 70,000 the next day. So the issue here is we're talking here about, because 38 municipalities report count absentee ballots in a central location. Be sure, whatever you put up your website, indicate that we have not counted absentee ballots or X percentage of absentee ballots have been counted. Megan Wolf said on this issue, and we'll hear from her on another issue in a minute, if counties wish to post unofficial election night results, it will be essential that their results webpage clearly indicate when results for a reporting
are incomplete and awaiting absentee totals. Before we hear from Megan on another issue, give us the context of this whole thing about when to post absentee ballot totals, please, JR.
Well, I'll use the word decentralized rather than diverse for how we do elections in Wisconsin. The commission can't mandate this, right? It's asking, please do this, because there's a confusion factor. Go back to 2018 gubernatorial election. Recall that Governor Walker and then Superintendent Tony Evers were neck and neck in that race. Then Milwaukee announced, like, I can't remember, 11 o'clock or so, by the way, we have X thousands of absentee ballots still to count at Central Count. Central Count is something that I think three dozen communities or so in Wisconsin use, where all absentee ballots are counted in one single place, not at the polling sites. And there are various reasons for doing that, et cetera, but Milwaukee's one of them. If you look at the returns that were reported in August, we were watching in real time these primaries in Milwaukee. There are a number of key primaries in Milwaukee that keep an eye on. They were showing 95% of precincts were in. But I was looking at the numbers and going, that can't be right, because there's a third of the votes cast in that race from what I saw in the primary 2 years earlier. Sure enough, Central Count had not finished counting the absentee ballots, and those numbers hadn't been added to those unofficial returns posted by the media on their websites. It gave a misleading impression that these races were over when they were not. Now, fast forward to November 3rd. Can you imagine, Steve, if it's a nip and tuck race in Wisconsin, and about 11 o'clock on election night, Milwaukee says, oh, by the way, we have X thousands of absentee ballots yet to count. The president, who's already set the stage of claiming fraud, et cetera, if he does lose, do you think he would ignore that on Twitter? Do you think he may embrace that as a reason to say there's something fishy going on, right?
Yep.
And that's part of it. It's a transparency issue. Now, they're not doing anything wrong in how they're doing it right now. But because the way it's counted, it gives it an inappropriate, incorrect perception that the returns are in, or these precincts are in, when they're not. And that's what you have to watch for when you see these things come in election night.
Right. Right. Okay. But now, on a separate issue, in some states, some voters got emails saying, we know where you live. If you don't vote for President Trump, we're coming after you. Yesterday, our elections administrator, Megan Wolf, was asked this specific questions. Has this happened in Wisconsin? Let's listen to her response, please.
Yesterday, the FBI and the Director of National Intelligence announced that foreign actors are trying to confuse voters in the United States and to sow doubt about the election process through emails to voters. Now, there's no evidence that Wisconsin's or any state systems have been accessed or compromised in any way. Any data that was used to make these email contacts is publicly available. This is not data that came from statewide databases. So yesterday's announcement, I think the most important thing is it serves as a reminder to all of us as we head into the election, and that is to seek out trusted sources of election information. And again, that's your state or your local election official.
And next week, I'll be interviewing, do a newsmaker's interview with election administrator Megan Wolf. Okay, new subject. Big debate over the last decade or so. Do out-of-state retailers, online retailers, have to pay sales taxes? U.S. Supreme Court says, yes, you do. And so the Wisconsin legislature enacted a law saying when out-of-state online retailers pay this, it has to be divided by divided equally per income taxpayer. The numbers just came in, $256 million, triple the amount of sales tax by online retailers the previous year. The Secretary of Revenue, I want to quote Peter Barca, said, we collected $256.4 million from more than 9,000 sellers, up from, in 1 year, 5,000 from the previous year. This, of course, helps the ongoing debate over the state budget, because the Federal Reserve reported an 8% decline in Wisconsin's GDP the second quarter of the year, raising questions about tax collections in the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th. So this was a bolt of good news, right, JR?
Kinda. Because remember, we paid for our income tax break by paying more in sales taxes. So remember, back in 2013, the writing was on the wall that eventually you'd be able to collect sales taxes for online sales with out-of-state retailers. So remember back in the good old days, you'd go to Amazon and buy something from someplace out of state and pay sales tax on it. But they knew that would change eventually. They were guessing it. So right, the Supreme, right. They put something in place. Supreme Court issued its ruling. Then they go, that kicks in effect. Remember, last year, the original bill was going to divide up that tax break equally among the four tax brackets. Instead, they focused on the lower two. So that helps, you know, more with the lower middle income earners. They have an equal break compared to the wealthy.
Yeah.
So the question I have is kind of like, when do you break even? So here's my kind of general guide. If you spent less than $2,600 in online sales, I'd say retailers last year, you probably came out ahead. If you paid more than that, you probably came out behind. Also, don't forget, this is driven in part because people are stuck at home for like 6 to 8 weeks with not a whole lot to do, stay-at-home orders.
Right.
I don't know this level of online sales is going to be sustainable going forward with the economy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's great news for your income tax bill come, you know, next spring, but it wasn't so great when you made those purchases in March and April when you're stuck at home.
I understand. Okay, time is running short, JR. We have to take this next item really quickly. The debate over supplemental unemployment benefits. Last week, the Department of Workforce Development said, we have started paying these additional $300 per week to, they estimate, up to 220,000 Wisconsin residents who were jobless during 6 weeks period ending August 1, August 8th, 15th, 22nd, 29th, and September 5th. The reason that I'm highlighting this segment is potentially the $300 per week in supplemental benefits could bring in $224 million. And yes, if you were unemployed during those 6 weeks period and you now have a job, DWD says you will be collecting those benefits. And DWD now says only about 7% of the millions of claims filed after March 15th are now unpaid. Got no time for a PSJR because we have to go to voices from the campaign trail. Ivanka Trump, President Trump, Pete Buttigieg, and Senator Elizabeth Warren, please.
The Republican Party under President Trump is the party of safe reopening. And we have to reopen. If you want a safe country, a prosperous country, a country that believes in American exceptionalism, there's one choice.
Joe Biden would terminate our recovery with a draconian, unscientific lockdown. I mean, not that you're already in it. And he'll keep Wisconsin locked up, locked down, and closed for business. Biden will shut down the country, delay the vaccine, and prolong the pandemic. And companies will be afraid to invest in Wisconsin. If you have this happen, as an example, Foxconn, they don't want to invest with these people. They don't want to invest. They don't have any security. They don't have any. They don't want to invest. I get in, companies like that will put more money in than they even promised. Biden's plan will crush Wisconsin. My plan will crush the virus and will make Wisconsin greater than ever before. That's what's going to happen.
You are in Wisconsin, the center of the political universe in so many ways right now. The power that every individual Wisconsin voter has is extraordinary. And we've got to make sure that those who are maybe thinking about whether they're going to bother voting because they've been so frustrated with the system, because they have seen so many failures, to remind them that your moment of maximum power is the moment that you fill in that ballot. And that's the opportunity we have right now.
Right here in Wisconsin, you all lie at the intersection. America needs you in this fight. America needs Wisconsin to show the way. And I know it's going to be hard, but I'm asking you, dig deep, because I believe this. If we stand together, if we fight together, if we persist together, they're going to elect Joe Biden, we're going to put Democrats back in the Senate, and we're going to build that America. We're going to do it together.
So much news this week, JR, that we're tight on time, but stock picks, please.
Please.
So rising Democratic fundraising. The state party, Steve, raised $12.1 million a month September alone through its federal account. Remember, it has two, federal account and a state account. This is a piece of the picture. It more than doubled up the Republican Party. And in these federal accounts, remember, often there's money moved back and forth between their state accounts and federal accounts.
Yep.
$7 million of that was from individual donors. $5 million of that was from people who gave less than $200. That shows you a massive small dollar donate operation compared to the Republican Party, less than 150 grand from individuals. It just, it shows the machine that they've created, and it's filtered down the legislative races, and it's why they're able to level the playing field in some of these places. They're being outspent.
Mixed.
All right, so recall politics. Look, the person behind the recall effort against Governor Evers, Jennifer Barnes, says she has the signatures, but she also posted on social media that she is misleading the media about things. So there's some questions about that. Even so, we love the parlor game in politics. There are all kinds of questions. If this goes forward, what would both sides do? In theory, for Governor Evers, this could be a good thing because voters have shown they don't like recalls unless you do something illegal. He could raise money in unlimited amounts. It could suck up the oxygen for 2021. They could put someone like Rebecca Clavish in a difficult position because we expect to run for governor in 2022. If there's a recall, what does she do in 21? She doesn't run, when she irritates some people in the base. If she does run and lose, what? I mean, it's just the possibilities are endless. Same time, Reavers, you never want to have a chance of being on the ballot losing, right? And there are all kinds of issues like that. So there's just a whole lot of like gaming this out. But the bottom line is people are skeptical. They have the numbers, and we'll wait and see what they if they file next week.
File next Tuesday. Falling, please.
Real quick, Fox Valley voters. Look, there are a couple of counties in the Fox Valley that they had a snafu with the printing. There's a ring around your ballot. They're saying, look, we have a problem counting these things. Can we go ahead and count it by hand? The Election Commission says, we can't tell you you can do that. You got to go to a court. We hope the court says yes. But that's 5,500 ballots that could slow down the process on election night. And oh, by the way, we're all petrified of a long, drawn-out, problematic count on November 3rd into the 4th, right? So not a great sign.
Okay. And as we close the show, just a reminder, Wisconsin Eye now has 225 interviews with candidates who are on your ballots on November 3rd, wiseye.org. They're accessible. And now I want to talk about next week, just quickly, the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities, formed in the aftermath of the Kenosha incidents, meets on Wednesday. I'll be having a civil dialogue with the two party chairs on Tuesday, 1 week before the November 3 election. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for October 23.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.